This episode of Table Talks is made possible by our sponsors, including the DenCloud team at Coldwell Banker Legacy Real Estate. Buying or selling a home in New Mexico? Jason and Bree DenCloud of the DenCloud team at Coldwell Banker Legacy bring more than 30 years' experience and a belief that real estate isn't just a transaction, it's personal. With unmatched dedication and real value, they're with you every step of the way. Start today at homebuyingabq.com.
Welcome to Table Talks with Kay Woodward. Married for more than 43 years, Kay and her husband Galen have three married sons, nine grandchildren, and are longtime pastors in Albuquerque, New Mexico. With the recent release of her new cookbook, which is filled with treasured recipes and stories, she's excited to bring you into her world of faith and family. So, take a seat at the table with Kay as she welcomes special guests from varied backgrounds and stages of life to dive into relevant and important topics of today. Please enjoy today's episode.
Today's guest is Lenya Heitzig, pastor's wife, mom, grandmother, author, leader, and longtime Albuquerque resident. She and her husband Skip founded Calvary Church in Albuquerque in 1982. In 2014, she launched Reload Love, a nonprofit bringing hope to children in countries impacted by terrorism. You don't want to miss her story. Well, thank you, Lenya, for joining me today on Table Talks. I am thrilled to have you. Been so looking forward to having you with me here today.
You know what? I admire you and Galen and the ministry and your sons and all things, you know, citizens and what's been happening in your life. And so to me, it's a privilege. I look at you as a peer slash mentor. I know we don't get time together, but I wish I could meet you on a weekly basis and just pick your brain because we have lived such parallel lives.
It really is interesting. I think that too. So honestly, I really, you know, there's no reason we can't do that once a month or try to make the goal. And because there's so much to share, I have so many questions for you too. And I was, you know, going to say the thing I regret the most is we've lived in the city together. We've known each other for years. We've been to the same services, conferences. Yeah. You've spoken at our conference. I've been able to be with your women of Calvary. And I think that my biggest regret is that we don't get to see each other more.
Agreed. Well, and let's fix that.
What could you have added to my life? What you could have been, would have been, had I just, you know, known. But life is different now. We have social media and we can see each other more, which is great. So I've admired you. I admire the way you lead. There is the integrity in your life is unmatched, and it's evident in our city. I've never heard an ill word of you or your husband or your family. And that integrity for this many years in ministry, like your family and my family, to come to the end of this season, I felt that way for my husband and I too. To finish well is a really big deal. And
didn't we both start in like 81?
Yes, 81.
Because we got married in 81, didn't you? Okay.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's how long we've been doing this.
Yes. And so to get through to this 45 years almost and go, okay, so, you know, we've so far so good, but I think we can think we've done it now. But I've admired you lead, the way you follow God's voice, your creativity, just your poise. So I mean, I could go on and on about how I have admired you from afar, but I treasure that the last maybe 7 or 8 years, 10 years that we've been able to, I feel like we run into each other anywhere. It's like long
yes.
friends. And
yes.
I love that. And one of the most powerful examples of that in my life, and I didn't realize, you know, even a decade ago, for you to launch what you've launched in your nonprofit with Reload Love was a bigger deal than even it might have been today, because you didn't even have all the tools we even have at our fingertips today. So you launched in 2014 this nonprofit called Reload Love. And we've talked about in the intro that you and your husband, you know, pastor Calvary Church of Albuquerque, and you have this amazing women's movement there. It's called She, right?
Sheology.
Sheology. I love that. If you hadn't have done it first, I would have stolen it from you. If I didn't like you so much, I would have done it anyway. But we started and changed our name to Flourish. But so take me back. Take me back. I've gotten to read the book. I've listened to it audio. I challenge people to, first of all, get the book. And if you're not a reader, listen. I have just been so moved, and so I've loved every second of it. But take us back to where it all began. What could have possibly stirred your heart to start Reload Love? And tell us a little bit about what it is.
Okay. Well, Reload Love, the concept is we take spent bullet casings, turn them into beautiful jewelry, and help children impacted by terror. But the way that started is ISIS was on the move back in 2014, coming out of Syria and really trying to make the caliphate, right? So they were coming into Iraq and other regions, and really they were creating a genocide of Christians and of Yazidis, which is a tribal people group in the region. And anyway, it was horrific as we watched it on the news. And I was just moved with, at one point, there is a city called Sinjar, a mountain called Sinjar, and a region called Sinjar. And that's where the Yazidis live. And it would be like for us in New Mexico, if we were looking at Sandia Mountain. And it's hot. It's a hot, you know, Albuquerque day. I think it was in the hundreds. And they were forcing all the people out of the city up this mountain. And it was an arduous trip. And they were, as you, when I visited, there's bombed out cars and bombed out, you know, wheelchairs, everything, as they were, you know, going up this hill and, you know, dragging their children in the heat of that situation, no water, you know, no nothing, just being chased. And so they sent in helicopters to try and rescue. And there were scenes of mothers trying to push their children onto the helicopter. And it devastated me. And I just thought, gosh, if that was my kids or my grandkids, I would want someone to rescue them. And, you know, what could you do? How could we help these people? And I guess that's a curiosity about my personality. I always think, how could I help them? And almost in any situation, that's just maybe how God wired me. And so I was in the shower, and those scenes were in my head, and that thought was in my head. And literally the Lord said, well, take spent bullet casings, make brass jewelry, and help kids impacted by terror. And I went, huh? Like, what? And so I am not a sportsman. Really, the first time I remember shooting a gun was in the jungles of Burma, because they were teaching me how to shoot a gun, which is just a funny scene. But so anyway, I got out of the shower and I went to the computer and I Googled spent bullet casings and realized they're in abundance everywhere and how you can get them and, you know, what that would look like. And then I Googled, there's so much jewelry that's made in New Mexico, a lot of silver, but I thought, can you make jewelry with brass? And yes, you can, but I don't know if you can do it with brass bullet casings, you know? So I called Jen, my friend. I go, I got this idea. I want to do this. And she's like, okay, let's go. So we drove down to Southwest Jewelry right here on Lomas. I mean, literally the same day or the next day, my friend's here. That's why I'm talking off my shoulder. And so we drove down and there was this lady there and she was so sweet. I'd like to make jewelry. Oh, okay. And, you know, probably charms. Oh, okay. And can you do brass and not silver? Sure we can. I go, but can you use bullet casings? And she literally went, and she backed away from me like, you know, I'm a nut. You know, who's coming in here? And so then I explained it to her and she goes, well, I don't know if the alloy's the proper alloy, but we can give it a try. You know, we can try. So then God showed me someone would try. And then maybe a week later, I went, well, someone's got to design this. I mean, I don't know how to make jewelry. So I just looked in the yellow pages, you know, jewelry designer. And this guy's name came up, Elliot someone. And I said, hi, my name's Lenya. I need to da da da. And he goes, I know you and a bunch of your friends. And this is a pseudonym. I don't usually use my real name because his jewelry store was popular in town and he didn't want to have it convoluted. And he goes, yeah, okay, I'll design a piece of jewelry for you. And then we have friends in the church, a lot of our security guys. I go, I need spent bullet casings. And they will come out to the sheriff or police shooting range, and you guys can pick up as many bullets as you want. So a bunch of homeschool moms showed up there, and we were collecting bullets. And by the end of maybe a couple of weeks, we had almost a ton, 1,000 pounds of bullet casings.
I can't even. I was, reading that in the book, and I'm thinking, I love that you said, when you get an idea, you don't wait, you just act. That's my personality. I count, not in a spiritual way. I count the cost spiritually, but I'm better if I don't know what's ahead of me. If I'll just take it as it comes, because if I knew certain things I've done in life, how hard they were really going to be, I probably would have never tried. So if you would have known, looking back over the last, years, 11 years or whatever, if you would have known, you might have looked at it differently in 2013 or 14 when you were starting. But
Certainly, there was some naivete about it.
yeah, I love it.
Because I said I wanted to help children impacted by terror. Now, that phrase alone tells you you're going to meet dangerous people and go to bad places. But in my mind, I wasn't going anywhere. I was just helping them. It was a disconnect. And so by the time I had found the jeweler and the one that would design it and the bullets, we had a first piece coming around, and I honestly had never studied terror. And when you move down that road, do you know, not even the UN has a definition of terror, because we think, some people think Palestinians are terrorists, and the Palestinians think the Israeli are terrorists. And so it's a term that, if you define it too closely on a political realm, it puts you in dangerous waters. So I was like, oh my gosh. So I mean, I am now researching terror and looking all over websites and, trying to find out who is, who isn't, where is the most terror, where is the most damage. So again, it was an educate, it was a learning curve. You're right.
So now in these years, where all have you been? So we'll talk about the countries you've helped, but you've been personally. So where have you traveled to?
We went to Jordan, and Jordan is only 5 clicks from Syria. And at that time, Syrians were, rushing over the border into Jordan. So, I mean, Jordan, I wouldn't consider a dangerous country, but other people may, just because of its proximity. We went to Iraq, to Kurdistan. And Iraq, I would say that was a higher risk. ISIS was not gone when we went to Iraq. And when we got there, we were pulled aside by an organization we were working with, and we had to do a day-long kind of safety thing that you wear your vest, and this is how you do a tourniquet. And if you're shot upon, hide in the wheel well. And if you see anything in the road, don't touch it. It could be an IED. And I mean, it was like some pretty, oh, okay. We landed there. I just didn't realize, oh my goodness, this is where I am now. This is how I have to frame my mind. So we were in Iraq, and we did go to Sinjar. And, having seen it on the news, and then to walk where your heart had prayed. It was post-apocalyptic, Kay. It was like one of those movies where, like, the Book of Elijah, or I don't know to name what movie, it was pummeled. It was just pummeled and deserted. And as we were driving down the streets, it just had this sense of terror, of destruction, of pure evil. And we got to visit a church that had just been, like, the steeple was blown off. These churches in the Middle East are made of stone, so you can't really burn them, but they put pitch on the stone, and so the walls were black. And they had taken all the Bibles and hymnals out into a courtyard and burned them. So there were burning ashes and pages of the Bible just floating in the air. It was an Orthodox church, so there was a mannequin that probably held the robes, the vesture for the priest, and it was at the other end of the courtyard as a shooting target. And we walked into where the nuns would sleep, and it was just, the ceilings were melted. It was just indescribable. And we rounded a corner, and there was a young priest, probably knee deep in rubble. And he was digging through this rubble. And I said to our interpreter, ask him what he's doing. And he was looking for a flannel graph that you would teach in Sunday school. And, you know, it has the flannel and then you have David or Eve or Noah or whatever. And he was trying to find all the characters for the flannel graph because he said, we are going to teach our children to love. We will not let them hate. And I want our children to know love. And he went into this whole thing standing in the rubble of just destruction. And so, of course, his name was Father Roni. I don't know how many flannel graphs we've sent him. We sent him one right away. And then he said, so-and-so wants one and another church wants one. And so one of the very first things we did is started sending flannel graphs to Karakush, which was the Christian city. And it was a genocide of Christians. I mean, you and I are pastor's wife. Never in my life did I think as a Christian in this day and age, a genocide of Christians would happen and the church didn't know it, say it, or do anything about it.
It's unbelievable. I feel like I'm walking that with you. You spoke of going through tunnels and just cities that had 75,000 people in them, and then no one's there. And I'm just listening to that. I can picture just the most horrific movie I would have seen, like a movie set.
Yes.
I'm picturing that when you tell it so vividly in your book, these stories, that's why I think it's so important for people to get that book, Reload Love. But you started, I don't want to get ahead of myself, so we'll talk about, you know, you've been to Burma, and you talked about having to do like workout, you and your friend Jen and the other Dot Murray, and y'all had to go to do a workout. And I'm thinking, well, that would have counted me out right then. And when they would have said, we got to work out for a year.
Okay, so that's a great story. I didn't know where to go for terror. And we're good friends with Franklin Graham. I think you know Franklin and who he is and what he does. And he came to visit at the onset of all of this. And so I told Franklin, I've got 1,000 pounds of bullets and I made these things and I want to help kids impacted by terror. And honestly, I just think he looked at me like, you sweet little thing, you have no idea what you're into. And so Franklin is a challenging individual. And so he said, I think you should go to Burma. And I go, Burma? I didn't even know where Burma was. When he said that, I had to go home that night, look it up on a map. And then I'm like, why would I go to Burma? And so in Burma, the conflict, the way it was described to me is that there was a Buddhist monk who considered himself like Osama bin Laden, and he wanted to get rid of Muslims. So this was Buddhists who wanted to terrorize Muslims, and we're so used to Muslims maybe terrorizing others that it was a complete flip of counterintuitive who you would go help. And so I went, well, that's really interesting. Maybe that's the best way to start so you don't jump right into Islam. And but Franklin said, but if you go, you have to take a bus ride down here in these two-lane things, and then you got to get in a boat and cross the Saline River, but you have to get under a tarp because no one can see you. And then when you cross the river, it's sand and it's a hill, so they let you the boat, and you're just like, run. I don't know if you've ever tried to run up a sand dune, but yeah, good luck with that. And so I had a backpack on, and fortunately someone was with us that saw me just like a turtle. I was almost falling over. My leg would have been in the air. Like, I can't get up. I can't get up. And this guy just grabs the back of my backpack, and he, you know, like Sam, my little feet are like fighting underneath as he's pulling me up the sand dune. So, we had to train because Burma is a really tough terrain. It's very steep and hilly. And so, when Franklin said that, he told us, you can go at XYZ period. We're sending a team in. And if you want to go in with that team, you can go in. So we realized we weren't in shape, and we found this gym that was training for warriors. That was the name of the gym. I'm like, what on earth? And this guy was a SWAT. He was on a SWAT team, and he put us through hell. I'm a good Christian girl, but I mean, he put us through things you should never ask a woman my age to have done. And even then, I was not ready. Even then, when I got there, I was not fit for prime time.
I just see it with you. There's just no way. And I would be thinking, okay, so where am I going to go to the bathroom? And what if I need to go and nobody else has to go? That's the things I worry about. So I feel like that I'm probably a little bit of a wimp, but I champion the people that are not. And I pray for you when you go. What courage. But you believed in this so much. You knew that you had to see it, feel it, experience it before you had the passion down. I mean, there's something about being in the middle of what God's calling us to do when we really get the vision, totally vision for it. And so I want to have a question though. All the jewelry that you sell and you continue to, and you have a website, but you wanted to bless children because your whole thing from the very beginning was these children who's, what are they want to smile again. How does a child deal with terror? And you talk about that and the whole acronym for CAN and how does a child deal with terror? But tell us about how you came up with your idea, how to bless children. And we're talking in, I mean, bullet torn, blown up cities. Here you decide to come in and you're going to build beautiful playgrounds.
Well, the one of the first trips we went to Iraq, and there are a lot of NGOs all over the world. And when something happens, these are non-governmental organization, NGO, in case someone doesn't know, they kind of come into this region. So you'll have a lot of people in hotels that are staying in the region to help the way they can help. Sadly, some of those organizations are like a dog and pony show. They maybe take advantage, take a few pictures of some orphans, go home and raise money, and it doesn't get where it should go. And we just happened to get to this school, and the principal there was having a bad day. And his bad day was people keep promising, but no one's delivering. And he himself had been arrested twice, had his teeth kicked out. I mean, he had been through hell himself, and he's trying to help kids, and he's probably had 10 other NGOs come through that day, and he's like, show me the money. So we were really in duress. We had solidified, we will never make a promise that we don't keep, and we have to be purposeful. And so we realized saying you're going to help kids impacted by terror is good, but how are you going to help them? And so this pastor showed us a playground that someone had tangibly done. So we came home and went, playgrounds are a great idea. Now, when I was preparing for all this, God is just an amazing God. I happened to meet a CIA operative. It's like Jason Bourne, and I met a ghost. Pretty much. And he starts kind of helping me, and he has served in that region. And so he's pretty familiar with it. So he would meet with me on a pretty regular basis as I would talk through things. And then we met this other guy that was ex-military, maybe a couple other pretty highly effective, like Green Berets or paratroopers, or I'm talking elite. And so when we got home, and these guys were now kind of, really sweet because, we're the little silly blonde girl who doesn't know what the heck she's doing in Burma. I think they all thought they needed to help us. So one day I said to them, we're going to do playgrounds. And they all just looked at us like, what? Like, that's the dumbest idea I've ever heard in my life. But when I talked to the CIA agent, he goes, that's the smartest idea you've ever had. And he goes, and here's a few reasons why. If you remember, there was a book called Three Cups of Tea, and it was about the Taliban in Taliban, was it in Pakistan or Afghanistan? They built a school. Well, a school is something of value. Immediately, the Taliban sees the school, see the girls going to the school. They now know who they are, how to kidnap them, how to control their families, and they take over the building, something that's an asset. So my CIA friend goes, a playground's not an asset to anyone.
Right.
If any nefarious people are watching you, they're like, I don't want a playground. Like, what am I going to do with that? And then it's partly like King David who feigned insanity. It is so counterintuitive that it's like, they're like, who are these people lugging in playgrounds? Like, they think maybe you're off your nut. We don't seem to be a threat, and it's not an asset. But to the children, it is. So it kind of, the CIA guy was like, that's brilliant. And he goes, the other thing about people in these countries is it's like, I hate you, don't leave me, is an attitude. They give you this, please come and help me get out of here. And so if you can go in, build a playground that's tangible, they know you were there, they know it leaves a landmark, but you leave and don't try and change their culture, it's a perfect message. So he goes, really? It's kind of like crazy like a fox. So we were like, well, who knew? So really, it was a God thing that we were afraid to not deliver something tangible of value because of people who hadn't. We saw a playground. We acted on it. Some thought it was foolish, but the CIA guy went, nope, it's phenomenal. And so that's kind of really why we started doing the playgrounds. The other genius of a playground is things are so tribal overseas. There are so many tribes vying for the same area. In Iraq, you see like five flags on a certain area, and you're like, they're all trying to say this is mine. And so if you come in with a playground and you have people of different tribes or different churches who don't necessarily agree, and you say, hey, we want to give your kids a playground, they're all like, oh, a playground. I want my kids to have a playground. I want my kids to have a playground. We should have a playground. So then they'll talk about it and then agree on a spot. And maybe it's the first thing they've ever agreed on that you're going to give something for their kids.
Thanks also to Salt and Light Eye Care, New Mexico's faith-based boutique practice offering expert vision care and aesthetics with purpose. Learn more at saltandlighteyecare.com. Hey friends, I'm so glad you're here. If you're enjoying this episode, please take a second to subscribe, leave a quick review, and share it with a friend. It's the best way for people to find the podcast and be encouraged. Now, back to the conversation.
So you're causing them to come to the table and, it start a conversation. And then they aren't going to allow their soldiers or people to shoot at the playground, right? If this is where your kids are going, they're going to protect the playground and make sure people aren't coming around the playground. And then the mothers who are never let out of the house as Arabs, they can come out of the house because they're watching their children. So now you've provided a place for a mother to get out of the house and talk to anyone else to process her problems. And now the kids are playing. And the acronym of CAN is that you want to find them a place of comfort, of calm. If you give a calm place, a child can de-stress. And then that you acknowledge them. Children get mixed messages. I'm a bad person. Why are we bad? Why are those people doing it? What did I do wrong? That you can acknowledge this wasn't your fault. you know, then, and you can provide counseling. And then the N is normalcy, that you provide something normal. So if a kid plays soccer or does crayons or is on a swing, they're doing something normal, their nervous system kind of decompresses so that you can be able to work with them. So the playgrounds ended up being genius.
Because they're these children, they're not getting out of there. There's no, that's the thing. You're not going in to say, okay, let's do this. We're going to change your life. And it's going to be for, you're changing nothing. You're giving hope. One of your, the slogans that I pulled out of that was arm children with hope. Because if we're, if we have hope, we have everything. If we're hopeless, that's a really bad place to be. And what a beautiful, I mean, there's so many stories surrounding that. And you, I'm just processing the stories that are in your book. But what is something, because you can't go in a place like that. Anytime I've been on a mission trip, and my heart is, I have a real heart for Haiti, and it's such a war-torn place now, and you can't get back there. And, you know, I'm so upset about it all the time. Like, I think there's got to be someone I can go find that'll send somebody over there to put everybody, you know, to fix this place, to start over. But all that to say, it stays with you. You can't get the stories out of your mind. Like, you leave, but you don't ever leave, because that's in your mind. Those tunnels in Iraq and traipsing through Burma and going to all the places you've been, and the women in one place, you said that they closed the door and they took off all their headgear so you could just talk to them. So what is a story? What is one moment? I know you have many that stayed with you long after you left the country.
At the moment you just mentioned, where the women were able to take off their hijabs, and because it was only women, and then just they talked to us like friends, and they had made all the food, and so they felt they were being hospitable to us, like they weren't less than us. We weren't there trying to give them anything. They were giving us. So yeah, hospitality is really important in the Middle East, most places. And receiving hospitality is a huge message. So it's learning in those cultures what resonates with them. And so letting them minister to us, and us eating their food, and they started laughing and sharing. But the story that was there is, again, these were Syrian refugees in Jordan. And in Jordan, we were to be very discreet, not take pictures on the street, not do certain things. They're, let's just say, big brothers watching you. That in these, some of these places, you may think you're safe, but you're being watched very carefully. And so this is one of those scenarios that, you know, you were waiting. And one of the moms talked about in Syria at that time, nobody could trust anyone. And, you know, Syria's just fallen, right? So, I mean, there's been so much. Bashar Assad's gone. And at that time, Bashar Assad was horrible. And nobody could trust anyone, not even your neighbors. And if you ratted on a neighbor, it may advantage you. You know, you say, oh, my neighbor did this, that, or whatever. And then they would come and, you know, it's like Nazi Germany. And you say, there's a Jew next door. And so they couldn't even trust anyone in their neighborhood. So this mom, her sons were walking across a busy intersection to get home, and one of the sons is shot and killed. And the other son, you know, has to come home. And I'm sure they got the body, but the son that survived hadn't spoken until he got to this place in Jordan. But that, it's a 5-mile walk. Well, that's just to the border. From wherever they were, they would have had to walk out of their country into a place where they live in an IDP camp. There wasn't going to be good digs or a good life. You can't work as a immigrant. Anyway, he got to this church where we had built a playground, and they had crayons, and they had all kinds of art therapy. Art therapy is really valuable. And he actually started laughing and talking. And so, you know, some people go, oh, a playground, what value? A crayon, what value? To unlock a child's broken heart, broken soul, you don't know, you know, what that's going to do.
How do you... I'm just like my heart's breaking listening to the stories. And you, like I said, when you go on a trip like that and you're in the middle of it and you come back to America and you're going in the grocery store where you grab a bottle of water or all the food you want and you feel relatively safe. It's just, how do you process the heartbreak when you come back, when you get the stories, how do you personally process the heartbreak?
It's a really good question. I think that God has been incredibly gracious that he gives you the grace for what he asks you to do. And Jen had my friend, my right arm, my left brain, whatever you want to call her. Someone said to her, well, aren't you afraid? And Jen and I can actually say we've never been afraid on these trips. And I always think I'm going to. I always think, oh man, this is it. Because one time we had to fly into Baghdad. And if you fly into Mosul, you're in Kurdish territory, but Baghdad is not. And we're like, Baghdad. And we're told, like, you stay in the airport, you wait till this guy comes, you know, you're being told very precisely, you know, what you should, it is like a movie, you know, what you should do. And we're numbskulls, really. And, you know, the electricity goes out at night and you're up in bed. And we've been in Ukraine and we've had bomb alerts come on where we've had to run and hide in shelters. And we can hear the Iron Dome taking out the missiles coming in. So we've been in just crazy situations. And God has like put us in a bubble of we're okay. It makes no sense. Now, sometimes when I get home, I'll be in bed at night and go, what on earth did you just do? Or it will bubble up. And then maybe that's post-processing. We'll talk to each other and say, okay, I kind of didn't sleep really well last night. I kind of thought about, you know, what that was that happened. But as a whole, I think God gifts you and graces you and provides for you for what he calls you to do. And I'd like to take credit. Like, you know, the joke is, and I think you read it in the book, I always say I'm not G.I. Jane, I'm Malibu Barbie.
I laugh so hard.
I really am Malibu Barbie. I like dressing up. I like heels. I like shopping. I like, you know, when Franklin, when I said to him, where are the, you know, terror victims? I'm like, are they in the Champs-Élysées in Paris? Because I'd love to go to Paris. And then he, no, you should go to Burma. I would never have scripted this episode of my life. Never, never would have laid that into my life.
I think the best times of my life, the best seasons of my life were the ones that I did not script. And actually the one I'm living right now, if you would have told me 5 years ago, this is what I would be doing, I would have said, there is not a chance. And I'm too old. I mean, who's going to listen to 64 almost? And who's going to, you know, I just would have told you all the reasons why not. So I love that. We can kind of go in with faith and who our God is and that we feel called. And I know people think, well, what do you mean feel called? But I just know when that sense of that I can't sleep and you feel the Holy Spirit nudging you, and the Holy Spirit doesn't nudge someone to go to Burma and have to prepare a year to go to a warrior camp to get ready for it. The Spirit, you know, you would have nudged yourself to go to Paris and I would have gone with you.
Exactly. Yes, I call you.
I would have been your Jen. I would have said, okay, Jen too. Here I am. So it's, you know, that's how I feel about certain things in my life. When, you know, the fact that I you live it in that season, but God gives the grace. I love that. And he puts us in God bubble wrap to let us not maybe feel, you know, the intensity of what we're getting ready to do. And this is huge. And the fact that it's still going, I love that, because it's a nonprofit. And sometimes when the new wears off, then, you know, that's what you're speaking. These people come, sometimes these organizations will go into these countries when there's a crisis or an earthquake or tornado or a war, and they're flash in the pan, then they're gone. And when you make the commitment to go and stay, and your presence is there and the playground's there, you left, but you know, that shiny thing is there to remind people that someone loved them enough to do it. I just think that's absolutely, you know, amazing. And my guess would be that the you're writing the book was part of this journey for you to make sure you got it down. It sounded like to me that maybe you were journaling part of your trip. I'm sure you journaled while you were there, because you're saying, and I stood on this, you know, and I'm there with you. Like, I feel like I'm on the trip with you. But what surprised you most when you were writing the book? And it's been a few years now that you wrote the book. So this is, I love that it's been over a decade. You've had this Reload Love. I love that it's still a passion. And, you know, I love that. So what did the book, what surprised you most?
I guess probably when you finally sit still and realize everything you've experienced, that it, you know, life was seemed to be moving at a rapid pace. And now when you can sit still and kind of look at it. But I talk about Burma in the book and the amazing missionaries over the years that visited Burma, Adoniram Judson, and how he gave his whole life to go to Burma, I believe in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that this man would work his way into the jungle. We traveled with Dave Eubank, whose father was a missionary to Burma, and his father used to ride elephants up into the area where Adoniram Judson would go. And then there were others in between them, like Segerstrom, the soldier who came into that region, and he wanted to be a missionary or a pastor, but he ended up getting conscripted as a soldier. And you watch this area that seems so remote, so untouchable, and you get there and you go, God's been here before me. And so many times, I think, Kay, those of us who have a heart for the world, and we're like, how can I get to Haiti? Who could help them? What could they do? And you get to the place and you're like, oh, Adoniram Judson was already here. Dave Eubank was already here. So-and-so was already here. And they tell you this history. So one of the verses that I love is that verse of, for the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, and his truth endures to all generations. So it made me feel like I was just a domino in all the dominoes that God had done in the place. You know, it wasn't me or Reload Love that is the game changer. The game changer is that God had been there and will continue to go there. And Jen and I always like to say, one of the biggest ministries we have in these things is the ministry of presence. That you would just be present to see them, to visit them. They are overwhelmed that someone would come and bear witness. And then they'll tell you, please tell people, please tell. So you're bearing witness. And so I really love the ministry of presence. I mean, just think about it. If you are in a convalescent home and someone comes to visit, it's the ministry of presence. You know, if there's a shut-in, and someone from your church goes to visit, it's the ministry of presence. And you know what? Anybody can give the ministry of presence. You don't have to train in a training camp to go to the hills of Burma. You don't have to, you know, raise a ton of money. There are people, I'm going to cry, all over our city that just need the ministry of presence. And so that's a lot of what's left on the field is the ministry of presence.
I love that. It's really beautiful. And you, I said to you when I was sending, you know, things I wanted to talk about, that I felt listening to your story of the beginnings of Reload Love, that you put your heart on paper. And I know that that had to be, I mean, I see your heart. I hear your heart. You can hear it when you read the book. It was, it's, you know, really such a big deal. And I get overwhelmed sometimes when I, like I mentioned, going on a trip and I'm thinking, I want to fix things. And I know you're the same way. I'm good at it. And I want to go in and here's all the things in 10 steps, we can have this place whipped into shape, but that's the way it works. And I, And I know sometimes people freeze to do anything in world missions or even in our own city, in our own country, because it looks so big. I mean, how can I fix the homelessness issue in Albuquerque, New Mexico? How can I fix the poverty in our own state? And then we're the bottom of the list in child well-being because it seems so big. But I really don't say this to be just a canned answer, but God gives us our part. And
Yes.
if we do our part and people answer that call, I feel like we can make a difference one step at a time. And I'm not responsible for what everybody else was called to do. I'm responsible to do what I'm, supposed
That's
to do. And building the playgrounds, that's what God kept you awake at night, trying to figure out how to do it and how to raise the money for it. And that's your part. And we all have a part. I do think people freeze and or they turn a blind eye to what's happening because they think they can't fix it. But that's not our call. You and I both know that when we do what God has asked us to do, and if we don't know, it's in His Word. The Word of God tells us on every page what a Christian, a believer should be doing to help others. And if we do our part, God takes care of. He brings the increase. He does what only He can do. And that's why I feel like the impact goes on and on and on and on of what you've done so far. And just reviewing, refreshing that in my own life by going through this story with you in the last weeks as I was preparing for this podcast episode has been so faith building for me again. And to think you can't give up on a place that seems so hard. We don't give up. We keep praying and we keep reaching. And again, you mentioned it, even in our own, wherever, who's ever listening, wherever you live, your own city has a
yes.
need, but God calls us to help the world too. It's a lot, but we have the ability, the capability to do what God's called us to do. You mentioned that earlier on this podcast, that God prepares us. He gives us the mercy and grace
yes.
for what He's called us to do. And I feel that people will be either watching or listening that our hearts are stirred, right? We hear something, we hear someone, and it stirs our heart. And we close the computer, we turn off the podcast or whatever, and they were like, that was nice. And I got a tear, and then I'm going to go ahead and go on about my life. But what I want them to do is to stop and listen and say, okay, God, are you calling me to do something? Are you calling me to partner with Reload Love? Am I to partner with maybe a ministry, my own church is, using? What should I do? I should not walk away. We can't see the pain in our country, our world, and just walk away. I mean, how?
Yes.
And call ourselves a believer. That's how I feel.
Yes.
I mean, I guess some people can, but we can't be a Christ follower.
Yes. One of the verses that we kind of defined us early on was in James, it says, pure and undefiled religion is this, to help orphans and widows. And we're like, well, if I want to show that I have pure religion before God, this is a no-brainer, right? This is something that He has said to do. But in regard to your audience, what I would say to them, yes is a powerful word. If God talks to you and you say yes, He'll keep moving you like me. Okay, God, I'll look for it. Oh, yes, I found someone who would melt the bullets. Yes, I found someone. Yes, I found someone. You just keep bumping into the next thing, the next thing. And your yes may be a smaller yes. Maybe it'll just be you find someone in your neighborhood. I have two neighbors right now that husbands have had Alzheimer's and had to be hospitalized and die. And I show up with food and I knock on the door and I gave them the streams in the desert, because I didn't know if they were Christians. I was like, maybe this will help you every morning. And all I'm doing is saying yes to a need that I see. And you'll see needs all day long and you can do them. I've been in Target before and I saw someone behind me counting pennies and they put something away because they couldn't get it. You knew that that was it. I just turned around and I said, do you think I could pay for your groceries? And this woman, my heart's beating. I've never had anything happen like this to me. Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm on a TV show, like something happened and it changed her day. I don't have to really go anywhere. to find some place to say yes, number one. Number two, you can join Reload Love. Go to reloadlove.com, look at what we do and pray. You can buy a piece of jewelry. When you buy the jewelry, it'll bring up a conversation and people will go, what's that? Where'd you get that? And you go, oh, it's made from bullets. And then they go, bullets? And you can tell a whole story about redemption. God redeems something that was meant for evil to good. And he's redeeming things on war-torn, you know, he's turning battlegrounds to playgrounds, you know, that he can change anything. So, I mean, if you want to tell the story of Reload Love, you can, but I just want people to say yes to God.
What's next for Reload Love?
That's a really good question. Since we started and had to research where terror happens, and recognizing, oh, Burma, that's going to be tough. There were a few places that we have prayed that we have not been able to get into. And one of them was Gaza, the West Bank. And we got into the West Bank this last year, and we're hoping that organization can infiltrate into Gaza. They have in the past. But some of these things are so on the down low, you can't even talk about who it is, where it is, what it is. But that's one of the regions we were hoping to, and the other was Sudan. And we have just partnered with a couple organizations that we think we're going to be able to get into Sudan this coming year. And again, you know, what silly person prays to go to Sudan? And so, but you're saying, Lord, where do you want us to be? And we're very probably like what you're talking about, Haiti. You have to have partners. You can't just land in Haiti and go, what do I do? You want to find partners who will share the gospel, that are there, that can get the money, that can transfer the stuff, that can follow up. So we really don't go to places until we have found really good partners that we know that we can go and visit once, make sure everything's good, kosher, get pictures, and then we don't want to go because we don't want to spend money. We want to send it to the partners so they can do what they want to do. We don't want to waste God's money. This isn't a travel agency for us to be able to tell great stories. As a matter of fact, most of the time, I don't want to go. Most of the time, I'll say to the team, you go. And most of the time, they'll say, no, you have to go. And I get pushed to do things that I wouldn't necessarily do, but I'm compelled because I'm told how important and what it is, and then I will do what God says to do. But I prefer not to spend God's money for me to go somewhere.
Because boots on the ground, those organizations that are tried and proven, they're boots on the ground, and they follow up, and they, that's how great missions endeavors, you know, get traction and keep traction.
Yes. Yes.
And we're not just one and done. There are people there to help us keep that ministry going. That's what makes this so beautiful. And I hope that people will look it up and enjoy the book. And we'll post how to find the book and all that in the podcast, the episode description. And it's easy. And people can DM me, or I'm pretty easy to find. I reach out. I get back with people right away. It looks like I have no life. As quick as I respond to people, I do have a very busy life. But I really do like to keep in touch with people. And Lenya, I feel so honored to have shared this space with you. I love that we've had this conversation. We have not been able to sit ever for an hour, 50 minutes, and just talk and hear your heart for ministry. I know your ministry. I know the fruit of your ministry through people that have been blessed. But to have this time with you, I feel it's just good. That's what's important about gathering and coming to a table to visit, because, you know, we just get to know each other, and I can help carry burden for you too. And I feel that people, again, audience listening, watching, that would think, they feel stirred to want to do something. Maybe there's something God's been nudging them to do, and they might want to step out in faith on something to make a difference in their community. I feel like this would be great for you to close in prayer and pray over not only who will listen the day it drops, but in the future, this podcast will show up in someone's feed and they'll listen. And God's timing is so beautiful. So if you would pray over those that'll be joining us in the future, and that how they, I know your words will make a difference, and how they know how to step out in faith. It's a big deal. It comes with practice, but would you pray over all of us, and me included? I would love that.
Lord, thank you for Kay. I adore her, and I love all that you have invested into her and her family and the church and the ministry that they have, not just in Albuquerque, but in Maui and other places, Lord. They have such a big imprint on the kingdom. I pray that you'd strengthen her with all might in the inner man, Lord, that you would just keep her rooted in love. She'd know the height, depth, breadth, width of your love, Lord, and be a conduit of it, Lord. Continue to use her in that beautiful way with her family, with such, you know, grandkids, making an influence on generations to come, Lord. Lord, thank you for the audience and those who are listening. And for them, I pray, Lord, that you'd give them boldness, that you would help them to get to a yes, show them what the yes is, and then help them to walk by faith and not by sight, Lord, that they would just take a step, even if they don't quite see where the step is going, Lord, but they'll just keep making those steps and listening to you. I pray that your spirit would guide them. They would hear your voice say, this is the way, walk ye in it, Lord, that they would know by your spirit. I pray that you'd give them confirmation through friends and neighbors and pastors and others, Lord, that they go, yeah, that sounds like God, Lord, that you'd give them the confirmation, the enthusiasm, the excitement, and the ability to follow through in Jesus' name.
Amen. What a beautiful, beautiful prayer. And so enjoyed our time together. It goes by so fast.
Really fast.
I'm just like, I'm not finished, but I thank you so much for your yes to this podcast. And I pray that you have just God blesses you in abundance for taking the time to pour into me and to the people that'll watch. I really feel really grateful. Very thankful.
Hey, you're a sweetheart. Let's get together soon.
Okay, let's do.
Thank you for joining me today on Table Talks. For more content and information about upcoming episodes, please visit my website at kwoodward.com. You can also explore other podcast links and resources there. Until next time.